In June of 1314, Robert Bruce was waiting at Bannockburn with 5,500 men, mostly spearmen on foot, awaiting the arrival of Edward II at the head of an army of 20,000. 20,000 men consisting of a huge mass of cavalry, mostly armoured horses and knights, another large body of English longbowmen, and spearmen on foot. And it was quite clear that the Scots had no chance of victory on an open battlefield. So he allowed the English to almost reach Stirling itself, thereby stretching their communications to the utmost. Bruce and his men lay astraddle the only road the invader could use. It was on rising ground and thickly wooded in those days. To the west lay rugged hills and moors which were impenetrable by a large army. To the east lay a half marshy plain, bounded on one side by the River Forth and with its tributary, Bannockburn, along its southern edge. Now when Edward II arrived there on the 23rd of June, he paused and considered. He decided not to try and push up through the woods and onto the high ground that evening. Under such conditions, his cavalry couldn't charge. He was unable to make a detour to the west because of the wild moorland, and a wide flanking movement to the east was prevented by the deep River Forth. Having thought everything out, he decided it best to make camp for the night on the plain. Although it was a little damp and soggy, it was still adequate for an encampment, and it would be protected on one side by the River Forth, and on its southern boundary by the Bannockburn. Now this was good thinking on Edward's part. He'd taken everything into consideration and made a wise decision. There was only one flaw in his strategy, and that was that he had done exactly what Robert Bruce had hoped and expected that he would do. When Bruce saw that everything was working out as he'd hoped and planned, he gathered his men around him. He said to them in effect, "We've got them where we want them. Do you want to take them on? If we lose, we lose everything, including our lives. But if we win something far greater than glory. We win our freedom." He said to them, "What is your wish? I will abide by your decision." And we're told that that decision was unanimous. As one man, his forces declared that they would accept their hour of destiny the following day, whatever it might be. And so, at dawn, the Scots spearmen came charging out of the woods. Robert Bruce had split his men into several groups, some held in reserve, some circling. The spearmen came rushing from the woods towards the huge mass of cavalry in front of them before they were ready or able to take up their positions. The English were thrown into confusion right from the start. They were taken, unprepared. The cavalry attempted to charge, but it was too late. And so the battle was joined. As the day wore on, slowly the Scots ate into the English position. Riderless horses turned back, causing confusion in the rear. That rear held by the waters of the Forth and by the Bannockburn. The encircling rivers, which were to be a protection to Edward and his forces, were now acting as a barrier, preventing them from spreading, preventing them from taking advantage of the land around them. It was acting as a cage. Then, suddenly, the entire English army disintegrated. Some men tried to swim across the deep River Forth and were drowned. Others tried to flee across Bannockburn and were cut down. And in the end, the whole vast English army was destroyed. King Edward himself escaped with some of his close aides and followers and narrowly avoided capture. So Bannockburn goes down in the records as a classic and decisive victory. It was only a battle, not the complete campaign, but it was the decisive battle. But another 14 years of continued hostilities were to pass before peace was finally proclaimed in the year 1328, when the Treaty of Northampton was signed by England's next king, Edward III, and King Robert I, Robert the Bruce, of Scotland. The following year, Robert Bruce was to die, in 1329.
He had earlier been received back into the peace and forgiveness of the Church, with absolution for his sacrilege of 23 years earlier. Scotland re-entered Christendom and once more was recognised as an independent, unified Christian country. On his deathbed, Robert Bruce asked forgiveness of God for having caused so many innocent lives to have been lost in the years of conflict. He thanked God for his last hours of repentance and offered up his dying pains in atonement for his sins. So, King Robert Bruce, the Patriot King. It's thus that he is remembered. Whatever his motives might have been in his younger days, pale into insignificance. It's the man, the king that he became, and the country that he formed and left behind, that provided the backbone to Scotland's future. And so, as Robert Bruce died, so began an age in which the reborn nation and Kingdom of Scotland began to grow up.